The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is the In the Garden show produced by UC Master Gardeners. I'm Katrina Kirkby, and I am one of your co-hosts today, along with Tina Spindler. And this week's topic is August in the Garden. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning. Who wants to be in the garden in August? It's too hot.
It's way too hot.
But we are going to give you some tips on what your garden needs in August, and then you can figure out when you can get out there to do it, when you're not going to be baked to death.
I'm an early morning person in the August in the garden. I don't spend a lot of time in the garden, but it's early.
That's a definite good plan. Yeah, I think what we're going to start out talking about on the show, of course, is keeping things hydrated, including ourselves. When I go out in the garden in August, man, I make sure I have a water bottle close at hand, even if it's early in the morning, because you get hot so quickly, and there aren't even any clouds to burn off in August. Usually the sun is just out from the get-go at the beginning of the day.
See, I really don't like the heat. I'm up like right before sunrise.
Oh, there you go.
There is no sun. It's just light enough to get out, and I'm done by 7 a.m. 7, I'm done.
Wow, you're an early bird. But we can do some of these watering techniques so that we don't have to spend a lot of time out there watering. And we talk about these a lot. We talked about them in July, but I am going to add some new ones that we haven't talked about before. But first of all, let's just review the ones that we normally talk about. The first of which is to turn your sprinklers on manually if you haven't done it recently, and make sure that all of the sprinkler heads are functioning, that they're all pointing in the right direction, because we don't want to have that water running off into the street. And then also when you do that, check your timer. Make sure that you have it coming on for the appropriate amount of time, for the appropriate number of days during the week. And if you don't know, or you're a little confused about, you know, am I over or under watering, our advice is to go to your water district's website. I know mine in Irvine, Irvine Ranch Water District, has a great page on their website that tells you for this time of year your sprinklers should be running, you know, every other day, and for turf it should be on, you know, for whatever it is, you know, 3 minutes, two different cycles of 3 minutes, or three different cycles of 2 minutes each. And let me just recap what that means. Cycled irrigation means that, say you think you need to water, or it's recommended that you water your lawn for a total of 6 minutes. Well, you don't want to turn the sprinkler on one time for 6 minutes for the whole time, because what that does is it allows that water to pool, to run off, and to not soak into the ground, perhaps. It's better to have three different cycles of 2 minutes each and a break in between, so that that water has a chance to percolate down deep where the roots are. And so the way you do that is when you have, you know, say you have six stations in your yard, and you program each station, you know, you have a drought tolerant area, you know, that doesn't need much water at all. But you have a lawn, and that needs to have more time. So you program each of those stations to come on for the appropriate amount of time, and it goes through one whole cycle of all six stations, and then you tell it, your automatic sprinkler system, that you want it to do three different times of that program. So it will start with station one, then go to station two, three, four, five, six, and when it's finished, it'll start again, one, two, three, four, five, six. But you're doing each individual station for a lesser amount of time as it comes on.
So what you say, it'll absorb better.
It definitely will absorb better. So if you haven't set your sprinkler system up to have that cycled irrigation, be sure you do that. If you're not sure how to operate your timer, and you've lost the instructions, if you have a gardener, you can ask them to do it, because they're usually pretty familiar with all automatic sprinkler timers. If you do it yourself, what you can do is you can find the model number and the make of your timer, and you can go online, and you can, almost every irrigation controller will have instructions online that you can then download and keep in a safe place.
And I tend to do it when it's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Some people like to do this stuff in the morning. Some like to do it in the afternoon. Most of us don't like to do it in the heat.
Yeah.
So just go have a glass of ice water or a cold drink and go over there and play with your system. And also, it's a good time to make sure my system is running. I'm using more water this month than any other month.
Sure.
So I really want to make sure I turned my sprinklers on the other day early in the morning, and it just took a few minutes to turn them on to make sure I had no leaks. There's no broken faucet because I'm pumping out as much water as I'm going to use any other time. And if there's wasteful time, this is when I would have, if I had broken anything, this is when I would have it. That I'd be paying the biggest price for it.
Right, exactly. You'd be wasting the most water this time of year.
And you know, Tina, you brought up, I think it was last month, about having those little flags. And those little flags are super cheap. You can get them at a box store. And what they are is just a little, it's a thin wire. At the end of the thin wire, there's a little flag. And I think they're wonderful. You turned me on to this a couple years ago, and I just have a bunch of those. When I turn on the sprinklers, I just go and hit. If there's anything wrong, I just put that flag there, and depending on who's going to fix it, at least I don't remember. You know, it's like,
no,
I have a
you
big
don't.
Yard,
as soon
and
as
like, was it this sprinkler, that sprinkler, what was the problem? But you got that little flag there, and you know that you could go straight to that problem.
Right, and they're reusable. Yeah, after you use them and fix the sprinkler that time, you just collect them and put them in a drawer, and then they're there for the next time.
I think I got mine 2 years ago, and I still like pull them out. And
you know, the other thing I use them for, which is kind of funny, I'm up against open space, so I'm plagued with gophers, and I use them to mark new gopher holes, because when the gopher guy comes, and when you have a pretty good size yard, you can describe over the phone where the different holes are, but it's so much easier for him if you put those little flags where the new activity is.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, so they can be used for lots of things. So let's go on to some other water preservation techniques. And of course, we always talk a lot about mulch. So if your mulch, if you haven't had a chance to mulch, or if your mulch is looking thin throughout your beds, now's a good time, even though it's hot, try and do it early in the morning or hire someone to do it. But get those beds mulched, because if you have a 3 to 4 inch layer of mulch in your garden beds, it will conserve so much water. And also, this time of year, it'll keep your soil so much cooler, so your plants will be less stressed.
Yeah, the plants will be happier.
Yeah, so all kinds of reasons to
do
that.
A lot of times, I don't know about you, Tina, but sometimes in the late afternoon, if I don't have the mulch down, some of my plants are kind of wilting.
Oh, I know. It's so sad.
It's sad. You know, they say, it's hot.
Little droopy leaves.
Little droopy leaves. You put some mulch on there, and they're like, oh, this is a lot better.
Yeah.
I can handle this.
Thanks, Mom.
It's kind of giving them air conditioning.
Yeah, or sunscreen, or, you know, it's just a great way to encourage general health in your garden.
And if you can't put 4 inches on, put something.
Yeah, even a couple inches is better than
better
nothing.
Anything's better than nothing.
Yeah. So let's talk about some other water preserving techniques that we don't talk about as often. One thing that I experienced last year is I have a big slope in the back of my property, and because I was being so thrifty with water last year because of the drought, I lost some plants on that slope last year. So I want to talk for a minute about preserving water and watering efficiently on a slope. And again, the first thing to do is to do that cycled watering with your automatic sprinkler system. It's especially important to do that on a slope, because think about it. If you pour a little bit of water on a slope, what's the first thing that happens? It runs down to the bottom of the slope, right? So you only want to have the sprinklers on the slope on for a very short period of time, but do it probably 3 different cycles when you're watering on that, if your automatic sprinkler system will allow you to do that. The other thing to do is to change the heads that you might be using on your slope to low flow heads. The low flow heads emit a smaller amount of water, and what you would need to do then is increase. So say they were, your old sprinkler heads were coming on for 2 or 3 minutes, you might have to double that with the low flow heads, because they're going to emit less water, so it's going to take a longer period of time to get water out. But because it's coming out slowly, it's not going to run off like the traditional heads do. The other thing to do on a slope is, and I had to do this for my citrus trees because I lost a couple, is I had some citrus trees on the bottom of the slope. But if you don't have, you know, and I had just watering basins that I'd made out of soil. But of course, over time, those watering basins, you know, degrade, and the water wasn't staying in the root zone of the citrus trees. So if you have some plants on your slope that need to have that water captured, I suggest that you either terrace your slope, which is a huge, you know, huge task to terrace your slope. But what I did is just where I had 8 citrus trees up there, I just got those interlocking brick things, you know, that you can get at a big box retail home improvement store. And I just made half basins on the downside slope that then captured, you know, and then you fill it with a little more soil and mulch on top. And what happens then is as the water wants to go down the slope, it's captured by that half wall.
And there's a lot of different ways you can do it. If you don't want to do those, I have those that what you have, and I have that for my vegetable garden.
Uh-huh.
But on the slope where I have my fruit trees, I did it really simple. It's like 2 posts and some wood boards.
Oh, there you go.
And
sure.
It was inexpensive. It was fast to do. And they last a long time. So
yeah.
there's a lot of different ways you can do it.
Yeah.
But capturing that water so it doesn't run off, however you do it, capture the water.
It's key. And then, of course, the other thing to do, even on a slope, is to mulch your slope. And if you're, you know, like my slope is pretty huge, so to mulch the whole slope gets kind of expensive. So I only do that, you know, maybe once a year. But like this time of year, I'll just go out with buckets of mulch and I'll just dump it around the plants that I think are needing a little more protection, because what that mulch does, again, is it keeps the soil cool and it catches the water and keeps it from running down and allows it to soak in a little better. So anyway, so those are a couple of tips. If you have, I hope nobody has this, but if you have an older property and you still have some lawn on a sloped area, or your front yard just, you know, slopes down to the street and you still have lawn, the other thing that you can do to make sure that that water is not just running off is to aerate your lawn. And so
would you tell everybody what aerating
sure
is?
So aerating can be done either by manually. It's basically a little tool that is kind of looks like, it's like picture the handle of a rake, right? But at the bottom, instead of being a rake, there's a bar that comes across and there's 2 tubes that point down. And what you do is you step on that bar and it pushes those 2 vertical tubes into the ground, and it basically drills little holes into the ground. You might also have seen the aerating sandals, which are pretty funny looking. They're these things that have nails on the bottom of them and you strap them to your shoes. I don't think those are as effective because the nails are usually only about 1 inch or 1.5 inches long, and so it doesn't go very deep into the lawn. So I prefer the other one, the other tool that has the 2 vertical little posts, because they're probably, what would you say those are, 6 or 8 inches
something
long?
Like that, yeah.
And so and there's a place where you put your foot and you just step in it. And if you have a big lawn, it's probably going to be too tiresome, and then you would want to rent an aerator. There's a machine that you can roll across your lawn that aerates it for you if you have a big lawn.
We've done that. We also have some friends that have older kids.
Uh-huh.
And that has been something fun for them to do. You could go stomp on stuff in the yard.
Oh, how
you know,
funny.
The teenagers just can go and
yeah.
play with that thing in the yard, and it wears off some energy and
yeah.
also helps your yard.
Yeah, it's definite. It helps so much when you do that. Because then, of course, the water hits the lawn, and now there are these holes, you know, literally there are these holes in the soil. So instead of running off, the water runs into the nearest hole and gets down where the roots are. So aerating is a huge, huge benefit to keeping that water on your lawn rather than it running down the slope into the gutter.
I'm amazed if anybody, since the weather we've had for the last number of years, anybody has anything running off.
Yeah, we definitely want to avoid that. So then a couple other watering tips for containers. It gets so hot when the sun hits the side of those containers. Man, that soil just heats up so quickly. And you probably are noticing you can water your pots twice a day and they still look like they're wilting. So one of the things that I have found is really helpful is to double pot the pots. And so you just find a pot that is a couple inches, an inch to a couple inches bigger in diameter than the pot that your plant is planted in, and you just drop the pot that contains the plant into this empty pot, and now it has some insulation. So the sun hits that outer pot and it heats up the walls of that outer pot, but by the time the warm air hits the second pot, it's not as hot, and so it stays much cooler, and the water that you have in that inner pot lasts a lot longer.
Wow. And what else do you do?
Then the other thing that I just started doing a couple years ago, which I can't tell you what a big difference it makes, is I started mulching my pots. I mean, kind of a no-brainer, but especially I have some citrus in pots, and I put a layer of bark chips on the citrus pots, and oh man, they are so much happier having, it's probably an inch and a half to 2 inches of chips, you know, wood chips on the top of that.
You know, those little roots are right at the system, surface, and when you're protecting them, they're happy. You know how hot we get?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
Do you think the plant, they can't get out of the sun.
It's like a sun shirt, you know, putting that mulch on. It's like you putting a sun shirt on and protecting your skin. The one tip, though, is make sure you move the wood chips away from the trunk of the shrub or the tree that you have.
Or the plant.
Or the plant, whatever plant you have in there. For if you have pots planted with, say, flowering perennials or annuals, and you have several plants in a pot, it isn't as easy to mulch it because you have it so densely planted. But if it's that densely planted, often you don't need to mulch it because the canopy of the plants is acting as a mulch. It's already shading the soil. So it's not quite as important to mulch those pots. But the other thing I've been mulching, because I grow tomatoes in pots too, because you always need more tomatoes and I run out of space. So in the pots I grow tomatoes in, I mulch that as well, and the tomatoes really seem to be happy having that mulch. So those are some tips. A last word of advice would be regarding hand watering. I hand water my pots, obviously, and I water them actually twice. So I go through the garden and I water each pot till the water, you know, is coming out of the bottom. But what you don't realize is that sometimes if that top of that soil has gotten dry, that water is kind of running to the sides of the pot and just going down the sides of the pot and not really wetting all of the soil.
Not absorbing.
Yeah. So the thing that I also do is I make one pass, water all the pots, and when I'm done, just like cycling your automatic sprinkler system, I go back and I hand water all those pots again. And then if I really have time, I take my finger and poke it in to the soil and to make sure that, you know, the water has gone down at least, you know, 3-4 inches to make sure that it's not just running off the sides. And then finally, regarding hand watering, just know that it's not the best way to water your, you know, beds, your planting beds, because even though the soil may look wet on the top, it's kind of hard for us to have the patience to stand in one place and water that area long enough for that water to seep down. So if you are hand watering only without an automatic sprinkler system, be sure you occasionally take a trowel with you and open that soil up a little bit and make sure that you're getting down deep enough to get to the roots, because oftentimes all that's wet is the top inch.
You know, you'd either take a trowel or they have these probes that you could stick in the ground to tell how wet things are, and the farther down it'll say it's wet or dry. We also have this one that's kind of you can help me describe it. It's shaped like a T, and you could actually put it in the ground and get like a core out.
Yeah, it's called a soil probe. Yeah.
And it is, that's another thing we use when I'm not quite sure how much water, if my underwatering, overwatering, what am I doing?
And that's especially good for fruit trees.
I love it on the fruit trees.
The soil probe that Katrina's describing is long. It's, what is it, 16, 18 inches?
Something like that. It's a good
14
size.
14 inches. It's a good size. And because your tree roots go down fairly deep, you want to make sure that you are going down deep enough with your watering that the roots are getting. If you're only watering the top 6 inches, your fruit tree is not going to be happy. So that soil probe allows you to take a core of soil out, and you can tell how deep the water is getting.
You know, if you're going to spend the time and energy to plant a plant or a tree, you really want to make sure that I'd rather give one tree enough water than several trees not enough.
Right.
You know, and if you're going to spend the time and energy, you might as well make sure it's happy.
Yes, and the other thing to remember, too, is that, you know, a lot of times our trees are planted in with other plant material, so we water the whole bed, you know, twice a week or whatever is required. But do remember that, especially in the summer, your fruit trees really don't want to be, or any tree does not want to be watered often. It wants to be watered deeply. So if you have it in a bed where the sprinklers are coming on twice a week, that might not be enough for it because the water isn't getting down to the deep roots. So you might once a month, I try in July, August, and September, once a month to take the hose, put an old-fashioned little sprinkler head on it, and I drag it to each of my fruit trees mm-hmm. and let it, you know, water for a good long time so that it has a chance to soak in. And if you do that once a month, in addition to your automatic sprinklers, mm-hmm. then you're probably getting the water down deep enough for that fruit tree.
Good idea. Yeah. A lot of us do that. I mean, a lot of us don't think about it because we do have fruit trees with our plants, and they need a little extra help.
They do. And they really do.
You will have a wonderful surprise if you take care of it because the fruits will be just delectable.
Well, and the health of the tree, you know, that's the main thing. Especially when we had this long-term drought and we were all trying to conserve water, we lost trees because we weren't watering deeply enough.
You know, I have a couple of this big, beautiful eucalyptus. Some of them I don't really care about, but this one is just huge, and I actually took a soaker hose to it.
Oh.
And two pine trees that have never been, I've never watered them. And in the last year, I took a soaker hose to both all of them because one is just, you know, it's huge, and it's beautiful. And my pine trees are in my driveway, and I've never watered them.
Yeah.
Usually we get enough water during the wintertime, and I slowly soaked them a couple times or several times.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because it reminds me of something I forgot to mention, and that is we often, when we plant a tree or a shrub, make a watering basin, right, so that the water gets directed where the roots of that new plant are. You know, we want to make sure that the water stays in that watering basin and goes right down to the roots. What we may forget about those plants, you know, that say we planted them in March or April in the springtime, now it's August. Well, between now and then, that watering basin may have, you know, completely disappeared, right? But that plant's still young. And so it's a good idea if you did plant new plants or even your older plants to go back and recreate those watering basins out of soil. But this time when you do it, because what Katrina was saying about the soaker hose, when she does that, she puts that soaker hose just outside what's called the drip line of her tree. And the reason she puts it outside, I mean, depends on how big the tree is, but generally, you know, at least a foot or so outside the drip line of that tree. And the reason is that there are a lot of feeder roots outside that drip line. And what the drip line is think of the canopy of the tree and where the canopy of the tree stops, you know, from side to side. And that's called the drip line. And when you are making a watering basin, you always want to have the watering basin a little bit outside the drip line because you want to encourage those feeder roots to continue to spread out as, you know, so they can find water as they get older. They'll look for water on their own. So this time of year, especially if you planted new shrubs or trees, check those watering basins, you know, reconstruct them, maybe make them a little bit wider, so that you can encourage the roots to go out into new territory. And also, you know, carry the hose with you and fill up that watering basin once or twice, and just to make sure that that young little root ball is being taken care of.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's it. Can you think of anything else about water? Gosh, that was a lot about water.
That was a lot. Well, it's August.
It's August, though. You know, that's all we want to worry about.
We don't want people plants to burn up and die in August. They need some extra loving.
Yeah.
You know, even though we don't want to be out there, I think the plants, some of them don't want to be out there either.
But they don't have legs.
They don't have legs.
Sad.
So just give them water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And be smart about it.
And since we were talking about trees, should we talk just a little bit about fruit trees right now?
Oh, great idea.
Okay. So let's talk about deciduous fruit trees. Did you have a good peach crop this
year?
Oh
my gosh, I am still getting peaches. I am just, we're going to have peach cobbler. We're taking peach cobbler to a friend's house on Saturday. Because we have the sweetest peaches in the whole world. And I have so many that we're dehydrating them. And
wow,
just like, oh, the peaches and the nectarines, just incredible.
Yeah.
How about you?
I only have one peach tree, but it's had its best year in a long time. And I attribute that to all the rain we got this year. The trees are just super happy. But one thing that folks might be noticing happening to their deciduous fruit trees right now, like peaches, apricots, plums, etc., is that they send up, you know, they're growing vigorously, right? Because it's sunny, it's warm, they're sending out all of this.
They had lots of water this year. The salt flushed out. Yeah.
And one of the things you might notice are what we call water spouts. And that's when these pretty much vertical, very vigorous shoots come out of the branches or sometimes even out of the trunk. And you'll notice that they're like way more vigorous and overtaking the other growth on the tree.
And they pretty much go straight up.
And they grow straight up. That's how you recognize them. And it's a good idea, if you can go out early like Katrina with your loppers, to cut those off. And the reason is that they sap a lot of energy from the tree because they're growing so vigorously. They're taking all of the water and the food. And those usually are not the fruit-producing parts of the tree. So go ahead and cut those off. And then if you have espaliered deciduous fruit trees, they're going to be growing like crazy, and the new growth is probably going to be affecting the shape of your espalier. So you want to take a look at that and either train that growth to grow where you want it, you know, horizontally on your espalier, or if it's, for instance, new growth that's coming out in a perpendicular direction or a direction that you don't want it, you just want to completely cut that growth off up against the main trunk or the main branch that it is growing from so that you can maintain that espalier shape. Because, man, things love to grow when they get sun and water.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Fertilizer.
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about fertilizer.
Sure. This time of year, I don't fertilize things too much except my roses. And the reason I don't fertilize them too much is because it is, it's really hot. When there's a lot of new growth and you fertilize, then there's even more new growth, which requires more water. So I don't generally fertilize a lot, with the exception of my roses, because I love my roses. And so I do go ahead and continue in my feeding plan, which I try to feed the roses about once a month, because I just love to have that continued bloom. So this time of year, when I do that, I don't know about you, but I've noticed, I've had some fungal disease like rust or powdery mildew, and I've had some damage from insects, maybe a lot of aphids. And so one of the things I do when I decide I'm going to have a rose day is that I take my pruners, my hand pruners out, and instead of just deadheading, I do a little semi-pruning of my roses, because sometimes they just look so bedraggled with the damage from disease and insects. Don't be afraid to give your roses a little bit of a haircut. Not as hard of a pruning as you'll do in January, but, I'll take them down, a couple feet on the ones that are tall, right?
Wow.
Because usually those fungal diseases are, on the newer mm-hmm. growth, mm-hmm. right? And I just get so sick of looking at them that I just take them down a bit. It depends on, how big the rose is. Obviously, if it's only a 2 foot tall rose, you wouldn't cut 2 feet off of it. But I just take that damaged stuff off, kind of reshape the bush a little bit, and throw those trimmings away. Don't compost them, because they do often have bugs and disease. So throw them away and then apply that organic fertilizer, give them a good watering, and you will have a brand new flush of bloom in a few weeks. And you can keep it going till December in our climate. So
it's beautiful. Tina has roses, I can't believe it, all year round. It's hard for you to come.
Yeah, and until January, I'm like, okay, guys, you're getting pruned. I'm sorry you're still blooming, but you're getting pruned anyway.
It's just spectacular. Sometimes some things that are just simple to do that just take a few minutes just give you days and weeks and months of enjoyment.
Yeah, I just think it gives, because especially in the fall, I don't know about your garden, I try to plant things that bloom in the fall, but it gets, you know, so hot in our summers that by September, you know, the garden's just not looking great. So I do love giving the roses a little TLC in August, because then they bloom again beautifully in September, and at least I have something pretty to look at.
Indeed. Well, we need to take a short break and let everybody know that they are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and the opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. Also, you know, Tina, we need to let everybody know, if there's so much information that UC Master Gardeners have on roses and on planting and on pruning and on irrigation. And I know a lot of people are driving around right now, but one of the easy ways to find out is check out our webpage. And you could just Google UC Master Gardeners Orange County, California. And it's UC Master Gardeners Orange County, California, because you want to make sure it's UC Master Gardeners, and you want to make sure it's Orange County, California, and not New York or Florida. And we have a wonderful website that tells you all about water and irrigation and fertilizer and pruning and fruit trees and flowers and just about anything you have a question on. And they also have a hotline. And the hotline, you go on there if you have a question, you can't find it on there, you want to know something, and you just type in your question. If you have a picture of something you're having a problem on, attach it. There's a group of volunteers that just love to answer questions. It's their way of giving back, and it's their way to share their information with the community, and they love getting questions. So it's right there on the front page. It's called the hotline. You just click on that link, and they will send you information or send you a link or answer your question. And it's just, they're very friendly and they're very nice people. And our website has a lot of good stuff on there. So
the
that's
other thing,
UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California.
Yes. One thing I just wanted to mention is, if you have a problem and you can take a photo of it on your cell phone and attach that as a file to your question, that will also help them identify your problem maybe a little bit more quickly.
Yes. Because it can actually, it's one thing describing it, but when you actually see a picture of it,
it
helps a lot.
Yeah. So.
And if you can't, you don't know how to do that, that's okay too.
No worries if you can't, but just if you have the ability to do that, that might help them answer your question.
You mean a picture's worth a thousand words?
Something like that, yeah. Especially when you're talking gardens.
And trying to describe a insect or a color of a bug or a...
Or plant damage.
Plant damage.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's tough.
Yes,
yeah.
It's tough.
The other thing maybe we should mention, because I'd like to talk about pest control a little bit, is that the University of California has an amazing pest management website, and it's so much more than that. It actually tells you how to take care of your plants, and that would be the University of California's IPM website, and that stands for Integrated Pest Management. And that is actually like having an entire gardening library at your fingertips online.
For free.
And you can rest assured, because it's produced by the University of California, that it is all scientifically based. So I just love it. And the other thing, speaking of pictures, is if you just go to that, and you can just Google University of California IPM, so that you don't have to worry about memorizing the exact web address, but just Google University of California IPM, and say you had a question about roses, you'll click, you know, home gardens, and then it'll have a whole list of types of plants, and you click on roses, and it will have a whole list of pests, diseases, and pictures. So if you're not sure, you know, that what this brown stuff is on the leaf of your rose, you can just start looking at the pictures, and odds are you'll discover that it's rust, and there will be a whole set of instructions on what you can do to control rust. So it's awesome.
Step by step. It's really awesome.
Really awesome.
And what's really nice, it's made for the home gardener.
It is.
You don't have to have a degree in anything to understand this. You just go in there, and they speak to your listening.
Yes. It's scientifically based, but the language is easy for you to understand. So you might even be able to solve your problem before you email the hotline.
And it's fun to go around and look, yeah, too. You can go in there and play on the website. It's fun.
Yeah. At least it's fun for us, but then we're dorky gardeners, so, you know, our idea of fun is
a little different than some, right? Yeah. Oh, God help us, huh?
So let's talk a little bit more about pests. The pests are pretty active in August because of the warm weather, so the walking around your garden early in the morning is a great thing to do because you want to keep an eye out and spot any damage early, particularly things like tomato hornworm, because if you leave your garden unobserved for a week, man, those tomato hornworms could completely defoliate and eat every leaf off of your tomato plants. So do try and walk your garden fairly frequently so that if you see a pest, you can control it. For tomato hornworms, you want to hand pick, but sometimes they're hard to see because they're green and they camouflage really easily. So I do both hand picking and I usually spray with BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, if I'm saying that right. It's always a tongue twister. And that is an organic pesticide that kills caterpillars. So be sure when you spray it, you're only spraying it on your tomato plants because you wouldn't want to kill the caterpillars for butterflies that we want to see hanging out in our yard. So use it judiciously. And it's always best if you're using a pest control product to do it early in the morning when it's cool or late in the day when it's cool so that you're not doing it in the heat of the day and perhaps damaging the plant tissue. Also try and do it when it's not windy because you don't want that stuff blowing everywhere. And then read the directions and then reread the directions. Wear protective clothing and wash your hands before and after. Wear rubber gloves.
And don't overuse.
Don't overuse. And when we say to use the pesticide, we are assuming that you either have written the hotline and found out what pesticide to use, or you've gone to a reputable nursery and they've told you, or you've gone on the IPM website and gotten that information, because you want to use the pesticide that is specifically for the pest that you're trying to control. And before you even use a pesticide, master gardeners practice IPM. That's why the website's called IPM. It's called Integrated Pest Management. And it just means that you use the least toxic method to control your problem. So the way I control most of my snail problem is my shoe. I just pick them off and I stomp on them.
Yep. Great way.
If they get really bad, then I will get an organic snail bait to spread in the garden. But if I can control them by, stomping on them, then I'm not hurting the environment, I'm not hurting myself, and it's just best to use the least toxic method that you absolutely can.
It's better for your plants, it's better for your garden, it's better for society as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need more chemicals, and if we can take care of it, just really simple by stumping on it or taking a hose and washing off those aphids.
Yeah, Katrina was telling me this morning she blasted her aphids before she came to record the radio show because she's been having a terrible aphid problem. So let's talk about aphids.
Oh, Tina, tell me about aphids. I have been spraying my plants.
With water. Yeah. So
I've been shooting them early in the morning and getting those aphids off. But this year, I don't know if anybody else has had aphids, but I have this one bed that the aphids are just coming to. I've never had them like this before. I've shot them off before, and I haven't had them back so quickly.
Yeah, because usually they're too stupid to come back. But
I got homing aphids or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'm guessing what's happened is you had a lot of eggs that were rehatching, Yeah. So aphids are attracted to new growth. They like tender new growth on plants.
Yes, they sure do.
And so because we've had this nice warm weather, and if you're irrigating properly, your plants have hours and hours of sunlight, and they're getting, water if you're irrigating properly. And so, of course, they're saying, hey, it's time to grow. So the plants are sending tons of new growth out, and that's what aphids are attracted to. So they come and they feast on that new growth. They're sucking insects, so they're sucking the juices out of the plants. And also, the interesting thing about aphids is that they can be farmed or cultivated by ants. And so the ants like the honeydew that the aphids secrete, and as other insects do. And so if you see that you have a lot of ants, one of your first defenses is to control those ants. Because if you control the ants, odds are they're going to diminish, and so they won't be farming crops or herds of aphids, and that will also help keep the population under control. And you know, to control ants, one of the things I like are the baits.
Yes.
And I put the baits out because those are self-contained. They're not messy. Hopefully, you know, if you have kids, you have to be a little careful because you don't want them to be attracted and play with those baits. But I like the baits, and I put them out in strategic places, and that helps control the ants. And I don't have to mix anything because they come, you know, pre-done. Then the other thing for the aphids is what Katrina's doing. She's going out there every morning, or maybe even twice a day, with her hose nozzle, the brass nozzle that gives you that really strong jet of water, and you just spray them and you knock them off. And as I said, usually they're too stupid to come back on the plant, but apparently Katrina has lots of eggs or something.
I must have lots of eggs. I'm holding that plant in my hand, and I'm like, you go, baby, you go. And it's coming back. I'm like, I've never had this before. They're just
so
stubborn.
It's,
and so I know if I stay on top of it, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But I've never had to stay so on top of it.
The other thing that you can do is you can use insecticidal soap. That is an organic insecticide, and you just squirt it on wherever the aphids are, and that soapy concoction covers their body and smothers them. Kind of gruesome, but it does. Another organic product that is used for multiple pests, we won't get into the details, but you can look this up on the IPM website, is a spinosad or spinosad. Different people pronounce it different ways. How do you say it, Katrina?
Both ways.
Both ways, yeah. Anyway, it's spelled spinosad. Another organic pesticide. Doesn't mean that you should be using it like crazy just because it's organic. But if you are growing food crops and you want to be sure that you're using organic products, this is one to use. But again, you know, read the directions, make sure that it's the right thing for the pest you're trying to control, and try and control the pest without using it, but as a last resort, if you're having trouble getting things under control, then perhaps try these organic pesticides.
You know, another thought process is sometimes we want to put our head in the sand and say maybe the pest will go away. I have done that before, and what I find is if I see them and the sooner I take care of it, the easier it is to take care of.
Oh my gosh, we always say when we're giving talks on pest control, the best pest control is you. You in your garden frequently attending to the problem early.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Lot less investment now, a lot less work later.
Yeah,
and your plants will be happier.
For sure. And also, if you're watering properly and your plants aren't stressed, you'll find you actually have less pest problems. Because believe it or not, pests are actually attracted to stressed plants. I guess they see a victim and they come swarming. So keep your plants healthy, and that helps defend against pests also.
Exactly.
Okay, should we move on to planting?
Oh, planting. Tina's starting to smile.
Yes. So, but here's my advice in August. Don't plant. Ha ha. No. But truly, don't plant
don't
in
plant.
August. Here are the exceptions. Okay, you're having a party and your yard is not looking so great. Okay, here's what you do. Mulch. Mulch the yard, clean it up, and put a fresh layer of mulch down on your beds. It will look wonderful. Focus on your pots. Take your pots, and if those are looking bedraggled, go get some colorful annuals and put those in your pots. Don't expect them to last for months because you're planting them, you know, in the heat. Think of them more as party decorations.
Disposable.
And disposable. And you might get lucky and they might, you know, last for a few months.
Well, also the seasons are going to change.
The seasons are going to change
here soon. They're not going to last through the whole winter. If you're planting summer plants, they're not going to be the winter plants. So just realize you could spruce it up for a party, but realize it's not going to be for the long term. and like Tina said, party decorations.
Yeah, and think of, I mean, what I like to do when I have parties this time of year or in September or even October is choose annuals that match your whatever your theme is. You know, if you mm-hmm. if you're doing a red, white, and blue theme, pick red, white, and blue plants to put in your pots, or
you fall.
Know, you... Fall, or if you're going to have, you know, table decorations that are bright summer, you know, like you're having a luau and you're going to do, you know, hot pinks and oranges and yellows, you know, pick plants that reflect those colors. And again, treat them as party decorations. You know, they may last for a month or two, they may last just for a week or two. So, but that's kind of my one exception, is that I will plant some new pots if I want to have something, you know, pretty and exciting on the walkway or on the patio or the
doorway. Yeah, I pretty much, you know, I deadhead and then I kind of clean up, and what's there is there, because I know it's not going to be happy if I plant it.
Yeah,
and
it's
so
not.
I just make the best of what I have and dress it up and clean it up. If you're having a party, and a lot of things, you know, deadheading, get rid of some of the old branches and mulch and.
Yeah, truly, if you clean up and you put a fresh layer of mulch, your garden will look lovely. It may not be as colorful as it was in the springtime because the spring blooming flowers are done. But the other thing also to remember, if you're having a party and say you have roses like I do, I always backtrack, and 4 to 6 weeks before I'm having the party, I fertilize what I want to bloom. So,
oh, you are so good.
It's
we're
true.
Not quite as all organized as Tina 6 weeks before the party.
But, you know, if like I hosted a tomato, you know, tomato tasting at my house party kind of thing. And so, you know, a month before I thought, you know what, time to give those roses a little shot of fertilizer, because it would be kind of nice to have some roses blooming in the garden when I have my little tomato tasting party.
And it's nice you can count on the roses.
They're pretty dependable, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks before. If you give them some food, they're like, "Hey, time to bloom." So, yeah, that's a good thing to do. But continuing on with the planting theme, there is actually something I plant every August.
Yes, sir. That's when I thought you were smiling about.
Yeah, and this is Katrina knows. I order seeds for the cool season, which is so counterintuitive because it's so hot in August. But you have to plant your cool season plants from seed in August if you want to be able to plant them out in your garden in October. So this is the time to get out those seed catalogs that probably arrived back in January or February and order the seeds that you want for your cool season garden.
You know what I find that's really cool about the seeds versus buying, it's cheaper, but besides being cheaper, is that you get vegetables that you don't get in a nursery.
And flowers.
And
because,
flowers.
Because you know me, I love the tall varieties, mm-hmm. and I love stock, for instance, which is a cool season flower. And in the nurseries, it's really hard to find the tall varieties of stock. And those are the ones that are amazing for picked bouquets because they're so highly scented and you can bring them in the house. So that's one of the main reasons I do it, is I want to be able to have things I can't get in a nursery.
Tina, what are some of your favorites?
Well,
I know Tina has
flowers.
Okay, well, first of all, Tina has a flower garden that is just stunning. And pretty much all year round is super impressive. And you think about it ahead of time, and the plants you plant, some of them are just so unique and just so beautiful that you walk in and you stop and you go, I haven't seen that, or I haven't seen one that tall, or I haven't seen one that big or that color. And I think the reason why that happens is you get a lot from seeds.
I do. I start a fair bit from seeds, but it's not overwhelming. I usually pick like maybe 4 to 5 things that I want to start from seed. And so this time of year, to get ready for the fall, I always get stock because I absolutely love stock. And then I also love English daisies. That's just a front edging kind of a plant, and they're just lovely. They stay low, so they're good for pots or good for the front of your border. And then, of course, the stock is good for the back of the border. I love Godetia. It's comes in shades of pinks and purples, and it's just a beautiful. And when they bloom, they're probably about 2 feet tall. And they're these really vibrant colors, and their cool season.
How do you spell that?
Godetia is Godetia.
Okay, go check that out, everybody.
Yeah. I also like larkspur. That's a lovely tall flower. I sometimes grow delphinium from seed because there are different kinds of delphinium that you can grow from seed that you can't usually get in the nursery. But, you know, I also, a bachelor button's something that's stupidly easy to grow. So if you're a beginning gardener or you haven't tried things from seed before, that's one you actually can just direct sow in the garden. It comes up, you know, super easily on its own. So there's, but again, like with the bachelor button, there are some taller varieties of bachelor button, and so, or colors. There's, instead of just the traditional blue bachelor button, there's some kind of purpley pink bachelor button as well. So that's why I just love to, you know, order these, look at the seeds, and it's the bane of my husband's existence because I keep, you know, baskets of these seed catalogs. But I tell him, you know, it's a pretty cheap and harmless addiction because usually once you order one of these catalogs, then you're on their mailing list and you get it every year. But if you want to save trees, you do not have to get paper catalogs. All of these seed companies have some amazing websites. And so it's a great way to just spend an evening sitting with your laptop, you know, surfing the net and just Google seed catalogs, and tons of them will pop up.
You know what one of my hardest problems is with the catalogs? Is choosing.
Oh, I know.
I want to end up with like 729 plants. Oh. It's just
Katrina,
hard.
I have so many expired seed packets at my house. I really, this year I'm going to go through them. But I always order, you know, I always say you're only going to order 5 flowers and, you know, the vegetables that you want, whatever cool season veggies. And let's talk about the cool season veggies.
Yes.
The variety that we want.
We've got 5 minutes left.
Okay. Cool season veggies. Peas. Sugar snap peas, where you can eat the whole pod. Peas, where you can let them grow to maturity and shell them. Shelling peas. Of course, lettuces. There's an infinite number of lettuces, and we're coming up on cool season lettuce. But Katrina, and my favorite green these days is kale.
Kale.
So be sure and order some kale. My favorite is blue curly kale, and Katrina's favorite is
cosmic kale.
Cosmic kale. Yeah.
But you know, I like growing about 5 or 6 different kinds of kale, and I think because we eat lots of kale, like we're having kale today for lunch.
Uh huh.
And I love combining the different kales.
Oh, that's so cool.
And you get the different textures and the different colors, and
yeah.
You can just take a snip of leaf off of each one, and I just love it.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, here it is August, and the kale that I planted in, when did I plant it? February? It's still going.
I have all my kales going.
And I had a crop that I planted in October, and it got full of aphids, so I pulled it out and planted it in, replanted it, you know, in February.
Yeah, you know, we find that it's just, kale is one of those things that you can grow and grow and grow. It's easy to grow. If you haven't grown kale before and you want something simple, grow some kale.
Yeah, it is absolutely, it's bulletproof.
It's bulletproof. It's prolific. Sometimes you get some aphids on it, so shoot them off. You know, you see them early, just shoot them with a hose.
But, and it does not bolt like lettuce.
Yes.
It can eventually bolt, but not as quickly as lettuce does. You know, lettuce, you get, you know, it always frustrates me because we'll get, you know, some 90-degree days in February, right? And that's the end of your lettuce crop. It's bolted. You're going to have to plant some new. And then, of course, the root vegetables are great for the cool weather. Beets, carrots,
beets. Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff is wonderful. And what else do you like to plant in the fall?
Anything else? I love cauliflower and broccoli.
There you go. Now I'm lazy. I buy 6 packs of those because my raised beds are somewhat limited, so it's just easier for me to grow those from transplants. But I do like to start my lettuce seeds. Do like to start my I don't start the peas from seed indoors. I start those directly in the ground, and so I wait to do that until the end of
now,
September.
Now, do you start your lettuce this early?
You live
closer to the beach than I do.
Yeah, I can sometimes, but I generally wait a little bit longer on the lettuce. Yeah,
because it grows so fast.
It does. So you don't need a long lead time on
the
lettuce.
I live a little farther indoors. Inland. And it's warmer in the fall.
Right. But if you are going to start the coal crops, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, if you are going to start those from seed, August is a good time to start those from seed. And the cool thing about starting those from seed is you can get some really interesting varieties. There's orange cauliflower, purple cauliflower. So that those are kind of fun to try. Yeah. So we have any time left?
We just have a couple minutes left. Any last thoughts?
The other thing I would mention about vegetables is your summer veggie garden is probably still going pretty well in August. So do keep it watered, do keep it mulched, do check it for pests, and most of all, harvest. Even if you can't eat it all, harvest it, because if you don't harvest it, then the plants are going to think that they're done, that they don't need to produce anymore. So do keep harvesting.
Harvest it. Give it to your friends and neighbors. My neighbors
Absolutely.
And friends love it.
Yeah.
You know, I grow too much, and when I go home today, it's like we should have done it this morning, get our tomatoes off.
But right.
I have so many tomatoes, and people love them as presents.
Let
me just drop off a few homegrown tomatoes to you.
Oh. And also, if you're gone on vacation during August, do find someone to come attend your garden. Even if you have automatic sprinklers, it's a good idea to have them, you know, come a couple of times if you're gone for a week to just double check, make sure those sprinklers are coming on, you know, pick any tomatoes or zucchini that are going crazy. Otherwise, you'll have baseball bats for zucchini when you get home from a week's vacation.
This is true. We've both done that.
So I think that's it for today. Stay cool, everybody.
Everybody stay cool. Realize you're not going to be doing a lot in the garden in August. And enjoy what you have. Prune up what you have.
Wear that sunscreen. Wear that hat.
Get out early in the morning or late in the evening. And there's a lot of fun things to do in August besides spending the day in your garden.
And eat lots of good veggies that you've grown.
Oh, yeah. All right. Until next week, we hope you all have a wonderful week. And we hope you stay cool in this weather. And looking forward to talking to you guys next week.